This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and good morning. Welcome to the morning run on BFM 89.9, the business station. It's 6 o'clock on Tuesday, the 18th of September. I'm Melissa Idris, and with me, Joyce Goh and Tan Chung Han. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello. All right. Stay with us all the way till 10 o'clock this morning. We're going to get you up to date with the latest news and views. But let's kick off the show this morning, guys, with a look at what's happening around the world. Now, I don't know about you, but sometimes over a long weekend, I tend to not keep up with the latest developments. You know, sometimes you need that to switch off a little bit. But what happened around this region specifically was Typhoon Mangkhut. And over the long weekend, we saw the typhoon batter Hong Kong, Macau and coastal mainland of China. It is the strongest storm we've had this year, equivalent at its peak to a Category 5 hurricane, which hit the Philippines on Saturday to be specific, and left a trail of destruction and 59 deaths.
Yeah, if you look at, I don't know, for me, I was on I was on social media as well over the weekend, didn't switch off. And you can see a lot of my friends posting up on photos of and videos of the typhoon. It's pretty scary.
Yeah, I had friends in Hong Kong showing photos of devastation there. I mean, skyscrapers and busted windows. And
Yeah. And it's as high, I think the winds were as high as 170 miles an hour. That's really fast. And if you look at the videos and the photos, it's pretty scary.
Yeah, and look, it's making its way over to southern China right now, and you've got millions being evacuated over there as well. And yeah, you know, likewise, I was also checking in with my friends in Hong Kong over the weekend, or sending them Facebook messages. I mean, Facebook has got this awesome feature right now about, you know, marking yourself safe.
Yeah.
You know, and so for some friends who were perhaps a bit slow to that part of Facebook,
you were worried.
Yeah,
for them?
Well, so I sent a message over, and they were fine. In fact, one of my friends even had to go into work on Monday, even with the storm. Yeah, go figure, right? I told her, man, like, that employee has got no chill.
What job is that, though?
Media.
Yeah.
Okay, sometimes you have to go and report the news.
You have to run to the fire, not away from the fire when you're in media.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Over in Pakistan, an austerity drive auctioned by the government aimed at cutting vehicle costs received, I guess, some laughter from the audience. Apparently, bulletproof jeeps and helicopters, whilst it drew hundreds of bidders to this auction, it didn't really make a lot of money. So auctioneers said the government had hoped to raise at least $16 million, but only $600,000 was made from the sale.
Well, yeah. Well, the bidders, I think they showed keen interest in four helicopters that the government's putting up for sale. But I think it was announced that that's going to be auctioned later this month. So I guess they have their eye on specific vehicles, but not everything.
Yeah, vehicles, not necessarily the motorized type. Apparently, the government was putting up for a bid 8 Buffaloes. So a different kind of vehicle there. That one, no real bids there. Well, a lot of question marks about what kind of bids they got for the 8 Buffaloes.
I think people just went to Kepo and have a look at what it was. What do you think? This is something that the Malaysian government should do. I mean, we want to raise money, right? We want to cut back on the country's deficit, so maybe raise money by selling, I don't know, auctioning off certain things.
Equanimity, yeah, put it up for a bid. Can you imagine that? You know, but that'd be kind of embarrassing, right? So if, let's say, they put equanimity and a private jet up for sale, and then, you know, the bids come in lower, it's like, uh-oh. Yeah,
so tak laku,
but I'll bid, perhaps on the low side.
Wow, Tan Chung Han.
Throwing his hat
100
in the
ring. Ringgit,
don't forget us.
Start low.
When you buy the boat, don't forget us when you throw that party on the boat.
It's coming up to 5 minutes past 6 o'clock. After this, we ask, will you support the addition of Malaysian as a category for identification on registration forms? Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. It's coming up to 11 minutes past 6 o'clock. I'm Melissa Idris with Tan Chung Han and Joyce Goh this morning. That was Hold Your Head Up by Argent. Now, if you'd like to join our conversation this morning, our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. So guys, you know, there's a petition by Taylor's University to add a category to registration forms. And the category is Malaysian, and this is for identification, right? So I know many of us, all of us, in fact, are so used to filling in registration forms with that race category. You take the box that you think applies to you. And that's, I guess, has been a long-standing frustration for many. Taylor's University has decided to do something about it. They've started a petition to hopefully move beyond this box-ticking, race-based categorization. And they say, well, you know what? What will it take for you to tick that box that says Malaysian as opposed to race?
Yeah, I think so. When you look at it, when you look at the video and then look at the forms, it's a pretty great move. But I'm thinking, why not go one step further? Because they have the box there, right? Mm-hmm. Malay, Chinese, Indian, others. And then there's the extra box there, Malaysian. Why not just go straight to Malaysian and non-Malaysian? Like, forget all the other boxes.
So it's nationality as opposed to ethnicity.
I don't know. Yeah, because if you put Malaysian there and you put all the other races, I don't know. I don't know whether there's a purpose to that or just, you know.
Yeah, or whether or not you have to tick the Malaysian box first and then have to tick another one of the boxes which has the races, right? Yeah, you know, I agree to a certain extent, right? So if you're trying to move beyond the race-based identification, so to speak, then why have Malay, Indian, Chinese over there? But now here comes the problem then, right? So if, let's say, we start having this discussion about, well, does Taylor's University have a diversified student population, right? Then you won't know. Right, you can just say, well, look around you.
You mean it's necessary? It's necessary
I wouldn't say it's necessary, but, you know, it's a helpful tool to have, right? You know, so beyond...
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I'm sure there are some, I guess, some forms or some areas where you kind of need the breakdown, right? So it will make it easier to identify, I don't know, medical issues or something to do or I'm sure that the need to break it down demographically is important. But there are also other areas I think is absolutely... not necessary. I sometimes find it a pain and I miss that box completely.
Yeah, no, and I agree. So and I think students should then be given the option of not checking any box. Now, the way I see it, I think it's a marketing stunt. It's sure to earn them some PR points, they being Taylor's University here. And I get that, no, and that's fine from a marketing perspective. But then again, no, so I'm imagining some scenarios about, you know, whereby these details will be necessary. So for example, if we consider how private education in Malaysia has started becoming something somewhat more elitist. It's less, you know, it's less inclusive, and if perhaps it's skewed towards one particular race or whatnot. Having these kind of hard data, i.e., checking those boxes in terms of race, could be helpful in those discussions. Otherwise, you're just left with anecdotal evidence. Well, look around you, and you can see a healthy mix. Well, give me some hard numbers.
No, but Han, it also, my worry is that with these kinds of categories in registration forms, it gives rise or opportunity for discrimination. Well, you know, when, you know, especially if you think about someone who may want to abuse that information, right? It allows for someone to discriminate. The category I also sometimes don't understand is then is why there's a category for religion.
Yeah.
I don't really understand why that comes into play in a registration form.
Mm-hmm. Sure, you know, and I understand both sides of the story. Now, religion, obviously, a sensitive topic, you know, likewise race. But then, you know, yeah, there are positives and negatives to this. I don't know how much a private institution of higher learning would actually go towards, say, discriminating just on the basis of knowing, you know, one's racial background. But, you know, I can see perhaps the lack of positivity that could come of, you know, realizing these kinds of demographics. You know, so look, it's not just universities; advertisers do that as well. You know, so I say, look, fair game to you guys. Go get those PR points, but you know, I could foresee some situations where that information could come in handy, and you just don't have it.
Well, tell us what you think. Would you support the addition of Malaysian as a category on forms? Our Twitter handle is at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. After this, the question, is the onus on consumers to ensure they aren't taken advantage of? You tell us on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 621 right now. I'm Melissa Idris with Joyce Go and Tan Chung Han. That was a great swing tune by Stray Cats, Rock This Town. Thanks for staying with us on The Morning Run and for weighing in on our conversation about adding that box, Malaysian, when it comes to as an identification within the within registration forms. We have a comment from Ro who says, yes, it's long overdue. What's the point of heralding our unity? But officially, when it comes down to your individual ethnicity, And he reckons it's not marketing, Han. He reckons it's a pioneering move.
And this is where I push back, okay, Ro? Look, it's not a zero-sum game. You can still identify with your ethnic identities while still being united as well. Mm. So, for example, when it comes to Hari Raya, we can all participate in it while recognizing that it's a religious holiday for Muslims, right? Or Malays, by extension. Likewise, Chinese New Year. Likewise, Deepavali. So they are not mutually exclusive. So same thing, same argument I apply to that form as well. You can still check that box without feeling less Malaysian. Mm. I mean, it's almost assumed that, well, Malaysians, then you pick one of these boxes, then if you're non-Malaysian, foreigner, and that could influence your tuition fees, you know, etc., then there's probably another box, right? It helps in identifying who that individual student is.
Yeah, I agree.
We also have a WhatsApp from Carme Emily, who says religion should not be needed ever. It is a very sensitive topic. And in her case, she said she's half Caucasian. When she got her Malaysian PR, they immediately put Christian, which she's not, on her application without even asking her. So the question is whether there's an option to write agnostic or atheist. I reckon just do away with that entire question completely. Yeah. Why is it even necessary?
Okay,
right?
So that one I agree, because you've got an element of personal choice there, right? Right? And so, well, for at least for some religions here in Malaysia. So, yeah, I agree with Carmine.
Carmine Emily. I assume that's how I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly.
All right. And then a real quick, Mohan weighs in saying, you know, be disruptive. Check all the boxes. And sure, why not? I like that.
You don't just mark everything and then skew the numbers.
That's right. And I'm with you there. So I was in the States when they did one of those surveys as well. So they ask you to identify your ethnic origins, right? So, you know, I was like basically checking out the boxes. My friend next door, Asian as well, but they're just German just because, you know. So,
to mess with the numbers.
Yeah.
Good idea, Mohan. All right, well, the other story that caught our attention this morning is to do with consumer rights. Now, Deputy Prime Minister Dato' Sri Dr. Wan Aziza said that people must take trouble to understand their rights and roles as consumers to avoid being taken advantage of by irresponsible groups. But what do you think? Is the onus on consumers, Joyce?
Well, to a certain extent. So remember the whole what happened in GSC? A lot of consumers, they were complaining prices went up and all that. And I had a chat with, you know, tax people, one of them, Raja Kumara, and he was on the grill. And he said that, yeah, there were a lot of complaints, but there were no official complaints. Mm. Consumers didn't take it one step. So it's like just
anecdotal, over their tarot.
Like, yeah, price went up. Like, you know, why is this so expensive? They say it's GST. But we did not take it one step further to actually officially put in a complaint to give whoever the authorities a heads up so that they can go and do the investigations, they can go and, you know, do enforcement. So he's saying that we have to go one step further, take photos of the receipts, keep the receipts, and, you know, actually make formal complaints. Don't just chuck up over like that tarik.
Well, yeah, here's the thing, right? So, okay, while that may be the appropriate course of action, well, if you are wanting to be thorough, how many of us are actually willing to go that extra mile for every single transaction we made? So I'll give you an example, right? So since SST 2.0 came in, my mama downstairs hiked up their price for Milo ice, right? So I actually used my cara belakang, and I actually got the price list, like the distributors, the professional distributors' price lists from some of these FMCGs here in Malaysia. And when I then passed on the price list to that respective FMCG, saying, hey, verify whether these prices are correct or not, they won't say nothing, right? So it is a tremendously tedious process, and in economic terms, it's what you call imperfect market, imperfect knowledge, right? So, you know, while that might be great for one transaction, you call the SST helpline. You're going to do that for every single transaction you make.
So what is it? Is it a matter of complacency or laziness on our parts as consumers? So what we do is, oh, we kind of file it mentally that the price has gone up. Maybe you think, oh, I feel like it's more expensive. I'm not sure, but I feel it. So what should we be doing? Should we be lodging complaints every time? Is that what we want to be as a consumer? I don't think that's necessarily wrong in being vigilant consumers, but how feasible is it? is it?
Yeah.
Right. And how vigilant is vigilant as well? Look, and that same issue of scarcity and opportunity cost, etc., that applies to the government as well. Do you really think they've got that many KPD and KK officers to patrol every single eatery here in Malaysia?
Yeah, well, according to the Deputy PM, she's saying that, you know, it's simple. Take a photograph, type the information, send it, WhatsApp to this number, 019-279-4317. And she said that, you know, the Domestic Trade Ministry, that they're going to take action for every complaint within 24 hours.
Well, I think that's the mandate. I mean,
that's the KPI.
That's the KPI. It sounds improbable. But look, the government is trying to make it as simple and as easy for us consumers to lodge complaints, right? The reason is, why don't we do it? Are we lazy, or are we so used to the idea of no one listening to us after 60 years, you know, of that kind of mentality is hard to change?
Well, I mean, well, again, you would like to think that that will actually be reality, but the reality is it won't be, right? So recall how the customs, DG, I believe, or one of the head honchos at customs tried to do demonstration on the hotline, and then there were some glitches there, and like no one was picking up the phone, right? So if he can't get through, what more the millions of Malaysians, you know, who might try to engage these channels, right? So I think it's understanding the imperfect nature of, you know, markets, not just here in Malaysia, but around the world. And ultimately, you have to then decide, right? I think the message that the DPM is trying to convey here is this. You then decide, is that extra, you know, price hike or whatever worth your time? Or do you have another substitute and then go somewhere else? At the end of the day, we still do have power. Vote with your wallets.
All right, it's coming up to the 6:30 News Bulletin. And to take us there, we have Best Coast with Our Deal, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9 is coming up to 6:40 right now. Elton John there with I'm Still Standing. And we're still standing here with you. I'm Melissa Idris with Tan Chong Hana and Joyce Goh. Over the weekend, guys, there was a bit of a debate going on social media. Actually, it was just yesterday and on Monday, where there was discussion over PASS's volunteer corps attire. So it actually resembled army ceremonial uniforms, specifically the Malaysian Army Dress 1, number 1 dress. And it was worn by the PASS's Amal, Unit Amal or Jabatan Amal Volunteer Corps during PASS's Muktamar, which is their General Assembly. And it drew criticism specifically from a veterans group called Patriot or National Patriot Association. And they said that it was disrespectful to the army. In fact, more than disrespectful, in fact, it was an offence under Section 140 of the Penal Code.
Yeah, and they're saying that, you know, before things get out of control, Patriot is they've urged the Ministry of Defence and the Ministry of Home Affairs to take appropriate action. I mean, if you look at the photos, right, it looks, yeah, kind of like an army uniform. I don't know, is it because they're upset? I'm thinking Patriot is upset because it's similar and therefore sometimes it can cause confusion. You know, you could mistake, I guess, a fellow past person for being an army member.
Yeah, so once again, you've got the good old debate between intent and perception, right? So if I guess from Patriot's point of view, right, the fear is that the public, not knowing the difference between the official army's number one uniform versus mm-hmm. what the PASS Guard of Honour was displaying, then the fear is that they could misconstrue it, right? Now, whether or not there was intent on the PASS state government's part, that's to be debated. Because, you know, okay, I guess this is a false comparison, but so say you bring it all the way out to, say, good old camouflage, right? Somebody who's just wearing camouflage now, you don't automatically mistake them for an army personnel, right? Now, again, I understand it's a very, very loose comparison, but then in this case, judging by the pictures here, they do look quite similar. Right. So the risk is definitely greater
in
terms of the misperception.
That's actually a good point, because what is the intent, right? The idea is, you know, is the intent to mislead, or to is it about pomp and circumstance? Is it about, you know, what do you call that? Inspecting the honour, the guard of honour. Yeah. So, and also, how is Patriot taking this? So I'm struggling to understand whether they see this as an insult to military tradition, because it's something that they've fiercely guard? Or is it seen to be something more worrying and malicious? You have people who dress like an armed forces, could give rise to concern that there are groups being formed that have ideas of wanting to be military or armed forces, right? So it's about the question of intent and the insult to their perception, how they've received it.
Mm. Yeah, and if you have a uniform, you could come out with a different kind of looking uniform. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to look like what the army uniform must be. I don't know.
So that brings the question also, why did we need this? Was there something to do with the past Muktamar that needed, you know, an inspection of the uniformed guards? I do have to point out something though, Joyce, that Jabatan Amal, the PASS's Jabatan Amal, or the Amal unit is a very mobile and organized group. They were I think they played a huge part with the Bursa rallies in terms of galvanizing on the ground support, the grassroots support. They were there. There were reports of them picking up rubbish. They were in t-shirts and you know, they were in uniforms, right? Red t-shirt. I think it was red t-shirts, if I'm not mistaken. And they were there as a coordinated unit.
Yeah. So in that uniform, So in that uniform, they have their own colored uniform, their own, I don't know, design. And yeah, it's a uniform. I mean, there's a reason why people wear uniforms. So you look like maybe morning run should have our own uniform, you know?
BFM has a t-shirt.
Yeah, right. So why in this case, I guess for Patriot, what they're saying is that it looks too similar to the army uniform.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And I can understand why they would fiercely, they being Patriot, would be fiercely, protective about this attire, right? Because, or this uniform, rather, I should say, right? Because if you are somebody who is part of the Federal Armed Forces, you've gone through the training, you've passed that bar only to see it perhaps allegedly diluted down to some smaller, if I may use the term, you know, perhaps some lesser...
Oh, civilians.
Yeah,
civilians, right? So you have armed forces who go through the training, who put their lives on the line, so to speak, and for that uniform to be, I guess, put on or donned by civilians, for them, I think it's about military tradition, right? And the honor that comes with putting on the uniform.
Right, and whether or not you're impersonating the actual, you know, armed forces as well, right? You know, whether that runs a risk of that, you know, that image stuck in people's minds. Mm. Yeah.
I still think we should have a morning run uniform, Joyce. I think it's a brilliant idea.
Yay!
That would solve the problem of thinking what to wear every morning. Mm. There you go. You can always get in touch with us. Our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we're going to be taking a look at Joe Lowe's website. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. It's 6:50 right now. You're listening to The Morning Run with Melissa, Joyce and Han as we take a look at what's in the news today. That was Blur with There's No Other Way. And thank you for your tweet, Hiswani Hassan. He tweeted in to weigh in on our conversation a bit earlier about the kerfuffle with PASS's unit Amal and wearing of the uniform that looks like the armed forces ceremonial uniform, the number one dress. Now, he says civilian ministers should also not be allowed to wear military attire that they have not earned to wear. So ministers now included in this.
Well, actually, that echoes a call made by Dato' Danial Balagopal Abdullah of Port Dickson, who is now stepping down.
Port Dickson.
Well, this call was actually made back in July 24th, and he also said that the Defence Ministry has been urged to not let ordinary folks wear uniforms of security personnel. So looks like Hiswani and also Dato' Danial Balagopal Abdullah, soon to be former Port Dickson MP, are in agreement there.
All right. Well, thank you so much for weighing in. Again, if you want to get in touch with us, our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. All right. So we also have news that Joe Lowe has overhauled his personal website to focus on rebutting allegations made about him in relation to the 1MDB scandal. So this updated version of his site now reads, and I'm going to quote it, "This website provides factual information, court documents and other materials on behalf of Joe Lowe, a global philanthropist, investor and entrepreneur who has been identified by various parties as a figure in what has become known as the 1MDB saga."
Yeah, he also mentioned, you know, in the website, you know, with hindsight, I may have done things differently like any young person, but any mistakes I made do not amount to the sweepingly broad and destructive allegations being made against me, he said. And in another quote, let me be clear, I am innocent.
Wait, do you think he's writing this himself?
I don't know.
Well,
right?
I'm sure he's,
or like
got,
he's got a tech guy doing it for him.
Well, you know, recall that he had engaged several PR teams, I believe, around the world, and legal teams as well, to issue statements on behalf. So I wouldn't be surprised if they are drafting these things up as well. I'm checking that out on joe-lo.com right now. And as the cover photo, or the banner for that at the top, you've got this misty picture of Penang, I believe, with Kom Tah Tower there. Yeah, so it looks quite nostalgic there. Don't know what he's trying to, what kind of emotions he's trying to evoke with using that picture. I'm looking at you two Penangites here.
I don't want to say my emotions on air.
Right. So I guess the question to ponder here, right, at this point in time is, you know, with this revamped website, with this increased communication, perhaps directly from him, do you guys buy it? Like, is it enough to sway your opinion of Joe Lo?
Well, okay, so it's not a question of whether I buy it or not, or whether my opinion has changed. I think it's speaking to a broader trend of this one-way communication, right? Bypassing media or intermediaries and using social media, the internet, as a way to have one-way conversation and put your version, so to speak, out there. We've seen that happen with everyone, every leader, every politician, every newsmaker who leverages these platforms, right? From Trump to Dato' Sri Najib Razak to now Joe Lo, where, you know, if someone writes something about you, you know, so journalists have that, the work of, you have to do the legwork, you have to talk to different people, you have to get both sides of the story.
But you have to make sure it's factual.
You have to make sure it's factually fact-check. And legally correct.
Yeah, correct.
So as opposed to, say, on social media, anyone can post anything. So you can post your version of the truth and your version of a story on social media. And the danger is now, if you withhold information from journalists or withhold communication from journalists, that gets picked up as a story. So now around Malaysia, reporters this morning woke up reporting this Joe Lo website and reporting his version of the story.
Yeah, so the question here also is, as Mel said, you know, there's this trend of going to social media to put out your side of the story, right? So is, you know, communicating through social media, is that enough? Because you can see Joe Lo coming out, he's revamped his website, sure. He's coming out with a statement. So now the question is that enough? And I'm sure, I mean, Bradley Hope and Tom Wright, they are the authors of that Billion Dollar Whale
which
book,
everyone
right?
was reading over the weekend. Everyone's carrying it like a badge of honor around Bangsa.
Yeah, I mean, how many times must they have tried to contact Joe Lo? I mean, even The Edge, when you're writing the 1MDB story during that time, 2015, even leading up to that, how many times did they try to contact Joe Lo or even Dato' Sri Najib Razak, 1MDB people, 1MDB board, 1MDB management? As journalists, we have to contact them, right? So question is, you know, in their case, sometimes did they, and my question is, did they communicate back? Did they come up with a statement? Did they give their side of the story? And if they didn't, why not? And why did they go through? In this case, for Joe, I guess he feels like he needs to get out there. Well, he needs to put his side of the story out already online.
It's because it's safe, right? One-way communication is safe. It's curated. It's controlled. No one can push back what you want to say. And you have time to draft your thoughts. We see that with social media, Facebook posts, the former prime minister posting long messages on his Facebook post. And that gets picked up as news. And it's all one-sided.
Well, okay. You might say one-way communication. I don't know if that's really the term that we use for social media, because it allows for interaction. But, you know,
okay. It allows for. But do they interact
okay,
back?
Okay, well, but the opportunity is there, right? So now I would also say that it's a less adulterated version of communication, right? Because you know for print, right? You said how many times have print media have to, you know, issue apologies or, you know, turn their word around. And that's why mediums like radio and TV are less adulterated as well, because you can hear it directly from the horse's mouth. Now, if you're an individual who feels that you're not getting a fair representation, again, I'm not trying to be an apologist here, but I'm just... again, being the devil's advocate, trying to see the other side of the story. So if you can put out your own message, right, without going through the media, wouldn't that be a truer, and I'm using air quotes here, a truer sense of your message, right? As opposed to trying to risk having the reporters and editors interpret or perhaps misinterpret what you say.
What's the benefit of that? I guess I'm trying to think about the direct communication. So will people appreciate that as opposed to, you know, being responsive and interactive?
Yeah. So to broaden it out, again, I'm not speaking on behalf of Jolo here, but you see Elon Musk. Elon Musk is really, really interactive when it comes to his social media channels. There are many other business leaders who engage with that. I saw Peter Bellew, another famous one. He's probably listening right now. Good morning, Peter, or good evening, wherever you are.
Yeah. Right. It's probably
so,
evening. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, Tony Fernandez, right? So, Nazir Raza, you know, he's very active on social media as well. So, it allows for that two-way opportunity. Now, granted, whether or not they take up that opportunity, that's a different discussion. But I think that, you know, just overall, broadly speaking, it allows for a less adulterated message to come from the source. Whether you buy into it or not, that's a different story.
Yeah, but current, given the current circumstances, I mean, it's pretty loaded. And you have one side who's coming out with the book, and then this side, Joe, is saying, you know, it's not true. So why not come out and you know, or if you're saying hard print, maybe in certain, I'm not saying all print. You're saying not all print, right?
Yeah,
there are
print,
different
yeah.
print that you don't take the comment and you twist it around.
But you do run the risk, yeah.
Yeah, but there are print media out there that who do report the facts. But in this case, coming back to radio, as you say, you can come on air and give your side of the story without, you know, anyone twisting or you know, sensationalizing that headline for you. So, I mean, Jolo, if not, why don't you come on air and come talk, speak to BFM Radio?
That's right. We would love to have you on BFM Radio and hear your version of what happened. A quick note from Andrew G on Twitter, who says that the website is created on behalf of Joe Lowe through his legal counsel to provide information to the public. Thank
right.
you for that.
And also, for the record, via Twitter, our boss Male also tweeted to Joe Lowe asking, hey, how about a phone interview on BFM? So I second that, and third that, and fourth that.
All right, we've got the 7 o'clock news bulletin coming up next on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.